I lived on a farm out in Iowa. I pulled the corn and I worked in the hay. Got trapped by a girl, but I wiggle free. Heard the Oregon timber calling me. Will you tell me something?
Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 34, part 2. Due to the duration, we had to break this podcast up into two segments. In the first part of the show, I interviewed Gabe Tiller, who's the guy who created the route and also heads up the nonprofit that does the maintenance and produces the materials and things like that for the Oregon Timber Trail. And then in the second portion of the first show, we talked about my first 300 miles of the ride on the Oregon Timber Trail, which covers the Fremont and Williamette tiers of the route. If you haven't heard that yet, definitely check it out. In this second installment, we get into the remaining 370 miles of the Oregon Timber Trail, which covers the Deschutes and the Hood tiers. We also get into a bit of info about my 120-mile ride from the end of the Oregon Timber Trail and Hood River back to Portland, and that was kind of a cool route that was mostly gravel but included some really, really good trails. So sit back and enjoy.
You laugh and sing and you cuss and fight. On Saturday night you go to Eugene. And on a Sunday morning your pockets are clean. Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back?
Welcome back, campers.
All right, so we've gone through the Fremont tier of the Oregon Timber Trail. We've been through the Willamette tier. We've been to Oak Ridge. We had our shit fall apart and get replaced and refueled. How's the beer out there?
Beer is amazing.
Okay,
all right. Yeah, I know this is a partial assessment.
Okay.
Michigan's got some of the best beer in the country.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we got just a ton of good breweries.
Right.
I'd say Oregon definitely rivals,
okay,
if not better. I mean, I can't, I'm not going to say better,
all right,
but it's neck and neck.
Okay. All right.
I was very impressed.
Speaking of beers, the next tier is Deschutes.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, it's in the famous Deschutes Brewery.
So what kind of trail are we hitting in this next tier?
So cross back over the Cascade Divide eventually in this,
okay,
section. But first, when you climb on Oak Ridge,
mm-hmm,
you go over Bunchgrass.
Yeah.
And that was just an amazingly pretty section, but super, super rugged. A lot of hike-a-bike in there.
Okay.
I've heard that described as one of the most talked about but least ridden trails around,
okay,
and that totally is exactly,
wow,
nails it. But that was a highlight of the ride just because it's so incredibly pretty.
Once you climb out of there, though, the profile looks like you stay up there for a while.
Yeah, you kind of descend down off this ridge.
Okay.
And going from Bunchgrass down, it's the base of the trail just gets better and better and better and better and better.
Right.
There's a lot of the stuff that was so rugged and so overgrown that you couldn't ride it. Way up at the top, which wasn't bad because you could just walk along and see all these beautiful. This is one of the areas where you really start to end up seeing all these volcanic peaks,
okay,
that have are snow capped around you.
Oh,
so,
wow,
it's and you're up there and you can really see a bunch of the stuff. So
nice.
It's really, really, really awesome as far as the views that you start getting into.
Cool.
But the trail just keeps getting flower and better as you go down. And then eventually that night I stayed at this Gold Lake campground, which was a godsend because I was just completely blown. I think I ended up having a little over 7,000 feet of climbing in 35 miles that day.
Whoa.
But it was, I was going for 10 hours to,
okay,
get that. So, when you do 35 miles in 10 hours,
yeah,
that kind of gives an idea of how tough a trail it was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Huh.
But it ended with some of the greatest single track going.
Gotcha.
The next day, oh my God, that was another just amazing section, just in a different way.
Okay.
Ended up going along the shores of Waldo Lake, which is one of the biggest lakes in Oregon.
Okay.
And just gorgeous. Once again, you got all these snow-capped peaks around you, and then you're riding along the shore of this just turquoise lake.
Nice.
It changes character, from being this wooded stuff to eventually kind of go through this place where there's a big wildfire. But that's full of wildflowers.
Okay.
And it's, you kind of just have this really, you got charred out stuff, you got kind of sun bleached stuff.
Yeah.
You're right along this turquoise lake.
Huh.
Just a really, really pretty place to end up riding.
Cool.
And that there's a lot of stuff like that along this section where you're just going along these just beautiful, like, little lakes and just quality single track. It's still rugged, you know, it still can be tough going, but a lot of cases just really, really nice trail.
Gotcha.
A little bit more moderate climbing. This is probably the Deschutes section was probably the easiest of all of the trail along the entire route.
Why so?
It was trail that had been used a fair amount.
Okay.
So it was really grooved in.
Good.
Well maintained.
Finally.
Yeah. It was very pleasant as far as, you know, the vistas, like you're riding along these little lakes. So, you know, if you're riding the hot part of the day, just jump in the lake.
Oh.
And then you feel really good again for another couple hours, you know?
Gotcha.
So it was really easy going. It was pretty populated because at this point in time, there's a lot of people clearing out of the cities and going up to these alpine lakes and camping and stuff.
Sure.
So you would run into a lot of people in some places, but that also meant that there was, you know, potable water and things like that.
Okay.
So, you know, basically from Chemult, I think I filtered one time after that between Chemult and then the Hood River.
No.
So
that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like there's potable water almost everywhere else. Yeah,
cool.
There's one spot I ended up camping, and that was in the Hood tier where I had to filter water. Otherwise, I was just able to hop from like potable water source to potable water source.
I gotcha. Now this Deschutes tier is the shortest one then.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I ended up staying the night at Lava Lake. And definitely have to give a shout out to Keith, who's one of our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Right on.
So, you know, we had talked about on the podcast that I was going to go out and do this beforehand. So he had shot us an email. And he's like, you know, make sure you look me up when you're, you know, in this region.
Okay.
You know, I'd love to meet up with you. So I shot him a text in the morning. Next thing I know, he's like bringing me breakfast and coffee, taking like gear off to go home and get, you know, laundered. Met me up, you know, then later in the afternoon, you know, took me out to dinner, you know, just like, it was like so incredibly helpful.
Awesome.
Great guy. Yeah. It was really cool to end up talking with him to find out about kind of the fat bike scene there, because that's a section of trail where there was a lot of moon dust and stuff. And I mean, like a plus bike or a fat bike would be ideal. Like a 4-inch fat bike would be a really, really, really good setup out there.
Okay.
Definitely would want suspension. You'd get by with probably front suspension, but a full suspension would be great. Just because there's just a lot of sand and loose stuff because you're back on the east side of the Cascade Divide, so it's really dry.
Oh.
And at least like when I was there, I mean, I wish I had a bigger tire than 2.6.
Oh, really?
And I rode around on Keith's bike setup, which was really dialed. And I'm trying to remember, I think he had, if I'm right, a Minion on the front, a 3-inch Minion, which is exactly the tire that I wish I'd had. I don't remember what he was running in the rear,
right.
But it's like, I remember like looking at his bike stuff and be like, that's exactly what I would want to run out here. He had it
cool. Totally
nailed. So,
that's sweet that, you know, someone that, you know, listens to us and emails us and chats with us that you were able to not only run into him, but that he could, you know, hook you up big time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was such a cool experience running to him. He was so helpful. And it's just, you know, like I said, and they got it going on when
yeah. It
comes to like fat biking and grooming in the winter and stuff like that. So it was really cool to end up hearing about a lot of that stuff, what they have going on and everything, kind of get caught up on the fat bike scene.
Yeah. Some local knowledge out there.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that got me up in the little town of Sisters.
Yeah.
And then, probably the day leaving Sisters was the trippiest day of the whole thing, because you leave Sisters and you're kind of riding through this flat spot where there's good trail. It's fairly flowy. And then eventually you start going past like these little alpine lakes. And I mm-hmm. think if I remember right, this might've been a weekend when I was going through this. So,
right.
You know, you go from being kind of like in the middle of nowhere to all of a sudden these like highly populated alpine lakes.
Oh, okay.
Just like people all over, like, you know, on their like, you know, floatable like unicorns and all this other kind of just crazy shit going on all
right.
around you while you're riding along and it's 90 some degrees and, you know, you're like, why the fuck am I on my bike instead of
right.
out there in the water
right.
doing what these people are doing? But you'd bounce between that and then get into these just like really remote, rugged areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just like the juxtaposition between the two was just really bizarre.
Okay.
Because you kind of, I finished that day off where you go through, I'm trying to remember what, it's the Sand Mountain Experimental Area or something like that.
All right.
But there's the, it's, I mean, everybody's heard of like the Oregon Timber Trail, like as far, or not Oregon Timber Trail, the, what's the historic trail? I'm blanking.
Pacific Crest?
No. The wagon Lewis trail going out. The Oregon Trail.
Oregon
just
Trail.
Just plain old Oregon Trail.
Right.
You know, everybody's heard about that. So I'm like, you know, in the frontier days or whatever.
Sure.
Well, what happened is, you know, historically, I guess, what would have been the Willamette Valley or whatever, filled up so much that then they had to have another kind of wagon trail to shift people over to another valley.
Right.
And this was the trail they had to take. So you actually ride along this kind of historic wagon trail.
Oh, kick ass.
But yeah, it's cool from a historical standpoint. It was really neat, but oh my God, did it give me appreciation for what like these guys ended up going through, because this was a really sandy area, and but there's still like ledgy rocks and stuff underneath that and everything. And it's like super rugged. And that was, it was kind of the, I have to say, it was probably some of the crappiest riding of the entire route of a whole 670 miles.
Okay.
But I felt like it was a really good addition because it gave me historical perspective as well as kind of made me appreciate, you know, some of the other really, really, really good stuff that the route had.
Oh.
Because you go from doing what I would describe as probably the crappiest from a trail standpoint section of the whole route into what I would probably describe as the very best, like, single track out of the whole route in the, I think it's the old Cascade Crest segment. I think that's what it's called.
The irony of the juxtaposition of those, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Totally. Oh. Yeah. I definitely have to end up giving a, you know, a shout out to Anna and Hank.
Okay.
Because what I ended up, based on once I got through that Sand Mountain area, I rode a little way south in the Mackenzie River Trail, which is a really cool trail. And wanted to stay on this. It's called Clear Lake. It's this glacier, it's a spring fed lake, which is really pretty darn neat. But all the campgrounds were filled up down there. So I was basically stealing water in one of the campgrounds, and Anna and her son were backpacking this Mackenzie River loop. And they're like, "You look like you need a place to stay. You know, we just have this one little backpacking tent on one corner of the site. You can stay."
Oh,
know,
sweet.
Yeah. So I'm like, "Oh, sweet. This is awesome."
Nice.
So yeah, I ended up sharing the campsite with them, which was super generous of them and made my life so much easier.
Yeah.
You know, so that was super nice. So definitely a shout out to them for their generosity in sharing the campsite with me.
Nice.
And it was nice. They were really cool people and it was good talking to them.
Is that near the end of this section then?
That same yes.
Lake? Okay.
Yep, exactly. That is basically the end of the Deschutes tier.
Okay.
And then you start to transition. And once again, you start climbing up the Cascade Crest.
Yeah.
And you get onto the other side, and this old Cascade Crest trail was just awesome.
Okay.
You've got a lot of climbing and just like these two big mountains. I think, what was the first one? I'm trying to remember the name of it. It was like Cache Mountain or something like that. Crescent Mountain. It was Crescent Mountain, I think.
Crescent.
Yeah. Okay. So the first one was Crescent, and this is where I kind of kicked myself. I only had a 32-tooth chainring, and that was really stupid.
Oh.
I should have been running a 28 or a 30.
Okay.
And this is all kind of hand-built, bench-cut, single track.
Oh, wow.
And it was really just a nice grade, but I was just slightly over-geared. So, like, either I would try to ride it, and I would just, like, blow up, or I could just hike-a-bike it. So I ended up doing a lot more hike-a-biking on the climbs than I would have liked in here. But it was not due to the construction of the trail. The trail was awesome.
Huh.
One of the best downhills I had out of the entire thing was in here. I want to say it was like 10 miles and you drop, you know, several thousand feet.
How is the ending of your trip different than the previous three in terms of the tiers? How's the hood tier different than the Deschutes tier?
The hood tier has got the most climbing.
Okay.
You know, you don't have the elevation you have at the beginning, but you've got more climbing than you did at the beginning.
All right.
You're on, in general, more popular trails that, you know, are much more heavily used because you're pretty close to the population centers up there. And for a good chunk of that, you're on the wet side of the Cascade Divide. So, okay. You know, it's pretty lush for a good chunk of it. Like this whole section was very, very, very lush that I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you ended up going up to Crescent Mountain and then you went up to the top of Scar Mountain there. So two monster climbs, great downhills, just gorgeous up there. And so I will say that that was probably some of the best riding I had in the entire thing. Supposedly you can do a lollipop loop in there. And I only did a portion of it. You could, like, I ended up descending off of Scar Mountain and having a lot of that be gravel road, like two-tracky type stuff,
mm-hmm.
where supposedly you can have it be single track back to the beginning. Yeah. Okay. And then it's like that is just a premier section that I would love to end up hitting and not having my bike packing gear.
Cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
So that was super rad. I ended up camping up on a little alpine lake, just, you know, like right off the side of the road. Next day, ended up doing a really long gravel downhill until I got to, what is it, Idana? I think that might be how you pronounce it.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's something like that. I think it's like, but I went to Ida County Store where you can get milkshakes and stuff. That place was awesome.
Okay.
Yeah. Milkshake, iced latte, beer.
What? Yeah.
They had everything I needed.
The essentials.
Yeah, exactly. Had, you know, really nice kind of like road climb out of there. This was an area where, you know, like you weren't as on trail quite as much, but so you were like on pretty good gravel roads or in some places paved roads, and you could really kind of make some ground, but it's just drop dead gorgeous. And
is this all public? On public, is the entire thing a national forest route?
It's almost all national forest. Yeah. Okay. You go through three or four different ranger districts throughout this whole thing.
Gotcha.
So,
huh.
Yeah. So that was just, it was another just really great day riding.
But you're inching your way to Mount Hood though.
That's exactly it. Okay. Yep.
Can you see it yet?
Yes. Okay. This is the first, that old Cascade Crest. This is the first time that you can see Mount Hood off in the distance.
Right. That's gotta be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And this whole section prior to that has been really cool because like the Three Sisters are these three volcanic peaks that are like snow capped. So it's like, you got all sorts of like really cool peaks, but to actually see Mount Hood, that was cool because you literally like zone in on that.
Gotcha.
We're both kind of staring at my golden retriever who is just about ready to fall asleep. Sitting upwards with his ball in his mouth.
Yeah.
He just keeps nodding off.
Kind of like Grandpa.
Yeah, he's pretty funny looking right now.
Okay,
back to bike riding.
Back to the Hood tier.
Yep. So I guess one kind of hint, trick, whatever, tip to pass along to other people that might potentially be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
On the northern half of the route, all these alpine lakes just get loaded with people.
Oh,
so
no kidding.
Do not, like, if you're anywhere around a weekend, do not plan on being able to get a campsite by any campground by a lake.
Okay.
So, you know, I purposefully kind of made my route and shot for this place called Forest Creek Campground along this way. That was an amazing campground. I had the place to myself. There's nobody else there. Every other campground I went through was completely full. I was the only person at this Forest Creek campground. Campground's right along a creek, so it was like, that was the only place I filtered water, I think, you know, for the whole northern.
Why was nobody there?
Forest. Just because they're all at the lakes. That's okay. Just, you know, people want to go swim and,
right.
You know, hang out at the lake.
Yeah.
So, you know, for whatever reason, this just wasn't that appealing to people. But it, from a bike packing standpoint, it, like, is freaking ideal.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was super rad. Just a lot of good riding up in this section. You kind of hit an interspersed between gravel and then a lot of good single track and stuff. In there, the downhill into Parkdale was amazing.
Okay.
Just really, really, really good single track. Parkdale was a cool little town. I ended up, there's a bed and breakfast. There's not a whole lot in Parkdale, but you kind of have some of the essentials. There's a Forest Service campground a mile or two out of town. But then in town, you've got a bed and breakfast. Which has only got like three rooms and they were already booked. So I just camped in their backyard.
Okay.
Which was awesome. And I could use their shower and bathroom and stuff like that. And they have a really, really, really good breakfast that you can get there. So I loaded up on that while I was there. They've got a brewery in town and they got a supermarket in town.
Oh, wow.
So, and then I guess, you know, if you're into this, they've got a supposedly a pretty good barbecue place too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Parkdale's a cool little just like agricultural town and just killer trail going into it.
Wow.
So then I only had like 30 miles to go.
Yeah. And you arrive at the base.
Yeah. Yeah. So out of Parkdale, you got a lot of just gravel road riding, kind of climbing up. And then you've got just killer single track. And there's a bunch of different ways. Luckily, I forget the names of the people that I ran into, but I ran into this couple pretty high up. Because one of the things I ran into, especially on this trip, is like when you get into these urban kind of single track, I should say, that's by a population center.
Okay.
You know, it's you've kind of got this honeycombed area where there's just all this trail. And when you're looking at your GPS, you're constantly coming up on these intersections. It can be hard to tell, okay, do I turn left? Do I turn right? Do I keep going straight? Because, you know, mountain bike trail isn't straight. You know, and a mm-hmm. lot of these things, you might, you know, go straight through an intersection, but then there's a switchback right after that. So when I'm looking at my, like, GPS and my map, it looks like I'm supposed to go, you know, left, but really that's a switchback that's like
up ahead.
Yeah, 50 feet ahead if I went straight.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to make wrong turns and these types of things. So I was so stoked to run into this couple, and they were like, you know, really good riders, you know, so I felt very confident riding with them. They were riding a good speed and stuff like that. And they were just like, hey, we know a good way down. Just follow us.
Okay.
So I hopped in with them. They took me all the way down to town, just had a rollicking, just ripping roaring.
Nice.
Great time. The Hood River trails are awesome. And then basically dropped in there and, you know, went down to the little park right on the Columbia River.
Yeah. So it ends on just a wonderful downhill.
Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. And Hood River was, it kind of was tripping me out after being out in the middle of nowhere for so long.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess before I get into that, a couple other things, like there was some just incredibly good trail leading to Parkdale. It's like a couple of standout sections that I just got to call out. One was Surveyor's Ridge, which the reason why I call it Surveyor's Ridge is I'm assuming they from when they were surveying Mount Hood
mm-hmm.
and trying to like figure out how high it was and stuff like that. But it's just, you ride along these extended sections, like just way up on this ridge with Mount Hood, like right there.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Same thing with Gunsight Ridge. That was actually a little bit before it on the route. Just that is another one of these ridges where you're just riding along. It's like Mount Hood is right there. Just killer trail, killer views, just amazing.
Wow.
So, you know, this whole Hood tier has got some just super highlight sections like that. It's just, it is more populated. It's not as rural or, you know, kind of like, you know, unfound gem kind of thing like the Fremont section.
Gotcha.
So I was super impressed with the Hood tier.
Well, as we start to wrap this up, you know, this is number two underneath your belt. You know, you did Colorado Trail last summer.
Well, before we get into it, I guess kind of just to mention, because once again, I think this is pertinent for some people that might be doing this, like want to try to do it. I did not take a shuttle or do anything to get back to Portland where I had my flight. I had to fly out. I ended up riding back, and I ended up using, I think it's called the Gorge Backcountry Route. You can find it. Limberlost is a company that Gabe Tiller had started, and he was doing some routes and, you know, some things like that. You can find it under their stuff. It's also on Ride with GPS, but I ended up using the last portion of that. And that's basically, it's a gravel road ride that does this big loop starting and ending in Portland.
Right.
So I did the last 100-ish miles of that to get back to Portland. And that was awesome because I was able to re-ride like Gunsight Ridge and Surveyor's Ridge. And then I was able to ride a whole bunch of stuff by government camp. So I was able to pepper in a ton of single track getting back.
Okay.
As well as having a really good gravel road ride back into Portland.
So when you were done, you really weren't done yet.
Yeah. I tacked on another 100 miles in two days and that was awesome.
Cool.
I was really bummed though, because the place that I'd shipped my bike out to is this bike shop called Velocult.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, between the time when I had talked to them and shipped my bike out and like got, you know, picked up my bike to do this, they put out a notice that they were going to close their doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally got back to Portland to get the bike box I'd left there and pack up my bike on their last day open.
Oh, that's right.
And it was such a killer shop. I'm bummed that they ended up closing.
Yeah.
So, you know, shout out to those guys.
Gotcha.
Sky, who's the guy who owned the shop. Awesome guy. Thank you so much. I hope you just continue doing awesome stuff for the bike world.
Right.
So I just kind of want to close that
portion
out. So, yeah. So this is the second trip I've done. Did Colorado Trail last year.
Was this harder, easier, completely different, apples to oranges?
I think this is very, very, very comparable to the Colorado Trail.
Okay.
Both in terms of the difficulty, you know, technically, physically, you know, all of that. I think it's every bit comparable as far as beauty goes. The two have very different types of beauty. You know, it's like Colorado Trail had just amazing high alpine, you know, views and single track, you know. Mm-hmm. So that is something that, you know, is unrivaled in its own way. Mm-hmm. But then this had just amazing views, but you had volcanoes, you had all of these little alpine lakes, all this other kind of stuff. So I mean, it's every bit as beautiful, just in a very different way. I will say that I think the weather is much easier in Oregon, at least when the weather window I had, it was very warm.
Yeah.
There was, I think, maybe a third of the days, it got up to about 100 degrees. So it was pretty hot when I was there. But, you know, the only time I experienced rain was at the beginning, and those were the afternoon thunderstorms in the Fremont tier.
Gotcha.
Other than that, I had just like perfect weather. Whereas in Colorado, I got rained on every single day because, mm-hmm. I mean, I did it in late July, early August. So it was monsoon season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because you're so high, you know, you have to really worry about thunderstorms and stuff like that. So,
That's right.
Yeah. The consequences were way lower weather wise. Okay. And it was way nicer doing Oregon. So I kind of feel like for a lot of people, it's a lot more approachable to the Oregon Trail just because you don't have that extra variable that might kick you in the nuts kind of
thing.
Well,
speaking of that, what kind of experience do you, what kind of experienced rider do you need to be before you're like, okay, I'm going to go from tip to tail on this thing?
I mean, it kind of depends on what your timeline is.
Okay.
I think you got to have some pretty high fitness
to
try to end up doing it in 15 days.
Okay.
But if you can give yourself 20 days, I don't think you really have to have that.
Oh.
And the good part is that, you know, towns are spaced out along this route, like about every 100 to 150 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to carry a ton of, you know, food and supplies.
Okay.
So it's very approachable that way. So I you definitely would want to have done a few shakedown bike packing routes,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, you know, if you're an experienced rider and, you know, you've done some camping in your life, you know, you could do a couple shakedown rides and I think you go out here and do just fine.
Gotcha.
It's not super, super technical. The resources that are available are really, really good. You know, so you know exactly where your reliable water sources are. You know where, you know, there's towns that you can get resupplies at. You know, there's basically all the information you need to plan this thing out and do just fine.
You can use this Google slideshow, I guess, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is another kind of piece in there.
Gotcha.
But it's a rugged route. You know, you got to be able to roll with the punches. I mean, there's some days like, I mean, I busted my ass and I did 35 miles.
Sure.
You know, and then there were some days that, you know, I thought they were pretty easy and I got 60-ish miles. You know, it's like, it just,
okay.
It's variable. You know, you got to do your research and you got to be able to put up with some rugged, you know, terrain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's very approachable. And the thing is, you know, you really don't have to do the whole thing in one pop. You know, I think it's worthwhile if, you know, like if you did it over four summers and just basically did one tier a summer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you could easily break it up that way. And then you've got, you know, a series of like, you know, 4 to 5 day trips that you could end up doing in there. And it's, there's so much variety and it's so cool to end up kind of traversing through the landscape that it's totally worth it to try to shoot to do the whole thing.
Get all four stickers.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely worthwhile.
Hmm. Well, cool. I continue to enjoy hearing about your trips that I'll never be able to do for a while. But I like it, breaking it up. That's something that's doable. For the average person.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, you know, the logistics are a little bit difficult to get to, like basically shuttle yourself from one end to the other. But luckily, like if you were to end up, let's say, you know, flying or driving into Portland. Portland was kind of like your start place, your home base.
Right.
There's good, you know, rail that you can end up taking south, all the Calumet Falls.
Okay.
And then you can basically ride from there, or you can end up, there's, I think, a shuttle company that can get you from there to the start down on, you know, Cave Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go all the way up to Hood River. And then there's, if I didn't use this, but I researched it beforehand in case I ran out of time. You know, then there's like, you know, bus infrastructure that you can take your bike on to get back to Portland.
Oh, gotcha.
So I had a pretty mint situation being able to end up, you know, coordinating with some other people mm-hmm. to do it. But it would be totally doable to, like, logistically do, you know, just fly into Portland, you know, hop on a train, ride or shuttle, ride the whole thing.
Right.
And then take a bus back. You know, it's logistically, it's very doable. Whereas, okay. you know, the Colorado Trail, it was a little bit, I don't want to say it was tougher for me, but it was like I had to line stuff up. I flew into, or I drove out to Denver. I had to ditch my car, which was kind of a pain in the butt because it was like nowhere near where the thing started.
Right.
Then I, you know, rode down, eventually, you know, got into Durango, rented a car, drove back up,
yeah,
had to
yeah,
pick
yeah.
up my car again. It was like, logistically, it was a lot bigger pain than what the Oregon. The Oregon's actually got a pretty good shuttle option.
Cool, cool. Well, anything to add before we end this storytelling?
I mean, other than, you know, a big thank you to the people of Oregon. I was super, super, super impressed with just how nice people were and gotcha. How approachable they were.
Cool.
And, you know, I don't want to end up slagging on the Colorado people because they were awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, it was just like this next level of awesome.
Yeah.
Like the Oregon people are like, and it, you know, everybody I ran into was just super cool. And it's like, and not just like the people that were like in the bike packing or cycling community, you know, the people in the cycling community were amazing. But then it was like, I mean, just, there was things like, I ended up riding off route to try to hit like this little county store. And this was in the Three Sisters area before I dropped down to Sisters. Cause I didn't want to filter water. And there was a bunch of these little alpine lakes and stuff. Well, all the stores were closed. So, and then I was like, oh, okay, I'll hit up one of the campgrounds. One of these things where I have to have a spigot. No, no spigot. Oh. So, you know, then I ended up just like approaching this RV who happened. I saw they had like a, what used to be a pretty decent bike kind of leaning up, but you know, it was pretty out of date or whatever. Mm-hmm. And just was like, hey, is there a spigot here in the campground? And people are like, no, but hey, come on back over here and we'll hook you up with water. You know, you just start talking to people and they're like, oh yeah, I used to mountain bike a ton and all this kind of stuff.
Cool.
And I ran into that situation time and time and time again. It's like, even if the people weren't mountain bikers or anything, you know, they had friends that were mountain bikers, they had family that were mountain bikers, they could appreciate what you were doing. And they kind of then went even the extra mile to help you out because
that's awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't like you were just some, you know, freak, you know, it's like they were like, okay, yeah, this is
dirt ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you kind of, I mean, let's face it.
I mean, you are a dirt ball.
After you've been on the bike all day, you are a dirt ball. You're kind of just that dirty, nasty, stinky. And, you know, it's like, but these people were just like super, 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 super nice and just going above and beyond. You know, you need anything else, you know, all this. And that happened time and time and time and time again.
Cool.
So it was the people of Oregon were just awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, so big thanks to them.
Well, and in 7 months, we'll do another podcast because I think you got a journey coming up this spring.
Yeah, yeah. So the spring, the goal is to do the Arizona Trail.
The full.
Yep, okay. Yep. Yeah, I think I still have to beg and plead with my employer a little bit to see if I can make this work. But I think I will be able to add another week onto my scheduled spring break and then try to tackle the Arizona Trail in a 2-week window.
Right.
And I'm super stoked about that.
And we might even have another discussion after that because there might be a Tour Divide in your future.
Yeah, that's kind of what the hope and the goal is. And
which
I don't know.
Which would be a drive for me to pick you up. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. You see, you'd be out there kind of, you know.
Cool.
Not really providing support, but, you know, moral support. You know?
right.
Yeah, sharing in the experience, which would be awesome.
Cool. Well, it was good to hear about this trip. I'm going to check out this slideshow a little bit more and kind of get into the nitty-gritty, but we need to thank you guys for listening and hanging with us through our what is it, not very regular podcast anymore, but you can shoot us an email at fatcatpodcasters,
plural,
that's plural, at gmail.com, or we're on the Instagram at fatcatpodcast. You can check us out there. We'll be back sooner than later with a regular edition of technical aspects of Fat and Plus Bikes.
Yep, lots of good fat bike and plus stuff to talk about.
Yep, so it will not be very long, and you'll hear from us again. So with that,
adios.
All right.
And cheers.
Peace out.
Well, I learned this fact from a logger named Ray. You don't cut timber on a windy day. Stay out of the woods when the moisture's low, or you ain't gonna live to collect your dough. Will you tell me something?
Hopefully you made it this far in this monster podcast. So thank you very much for listening. The music we are using on today's show is a Johnny Cash song named Lumberjack, and was from his Ride This Train album. You can find all our shows at fat-bike.com, including notes for today's show.
Morning to night, you laugh and sing and you cuss and fight. On Saturday night, you go to Eugene. And on a Sunday morning, your pockets are clean. Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back? Is it two for stop or four for go? Boy, ask a whistle punk. I don't know.